Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com, and
Hi, I'm John.
John using his radio voice. We are sitting here at my kitchen table, 6 feet away from each other, because here we are on March 19th, and everybody is a little bit anxious about the pandemic, as we should be cautious. And so we're being cautious by sitting 6 feet away. You know, with everything going on in the news, and I don't know when you'll listen to this, but if you think about what was going on, whenever it is you listen to this story, here we are on March 19th, and everybody is pretty wound up, reasonably so, with concern about the spread of the virus. So, I was thinking, okay, what kind of a story, and John and I were talking about what kind of a story would be good for today. Something that maybe addressed anxiety, and I thought, well, maybe something just light and kind of humorous, and of course, we fall on the side of light and humorous.
Something with a happy ending.
Something with a happy ending, that's right. Well, to tell this story, we have to go back in time. This is about 1979, I think. Late 70s, anyway, and the Forest Service, at that time, I was actually working for the state forestry, but the Forest Service was conducting a large prescribed burn, and in this case, it was in this kind of a desert mountain range in Arizona, and so it involved, oh, I don't know, maybe 50 or 60 people. Now, this was going to be about a 15,000-acre prescribed burn, which back in those days was gigantic. It's a big prescribed burn now, but it was really big back then because it's difficult to do. Now, as I describe all of what was going on in preparation for this prescribed or controlled burn, depending on your terminology, Think about the environment that we're working in, because, you know, I had shortly after this fire, a couple years later, or maybe a year or two later, I went to work for the fire department. And so I went from being a strictly wildland firefighter to being a city firefighter that also did wildland firefighting. But when you're a city firefighter, municipal or county firefighter, you are in your station. Unless you're running errands, out doing training, and then there's a call and you respond like you see everybody responding, and like I've described many of those scenarios. But when you're a wildland firefighter, you find yourself going all over the place and doing all sorts of different kinds of things that as a city firefighter, oftentimes you don't get exposed to. Now, this was one of those kinds of instances where I worked 100 miles away from this prescribed burn. But they were gathering everybody up. Who can come and help? We think this day is going to be the right day because, you know, you have prescriptions, we call them a prescription. The temperature has to be between, you know, say 70 and 85, or maybe the temperature has got to be between 80 and 95. The relative humidity has got to meet these parameters. You can't just go out there and start burning, because that's when you lose those fires, it ends up getting bigger than you had planned, or worse. You have to have, and even if you have the parameters, the prescription for that burn, you know, the wind has to be less than this speed, and it has to be coming out of the Northwest. I mean, it's pretty specific how you can burn. So you gather everybody up hoping that the conditions are going to be right for that burn. Now, nowadays, you have to also deal with getting a permit from the Clean Air Authority. So whoever runs the Clean Air Authority in that state, you have to get a permit. So you can't light until you have a permit. So not only do you have to meet all these weather parameters and fuel moisture parameters, you got to get a permit from the state, and they got to make sure the smoke isn't going to blow the wrong direction into a town or something. So it's complicated, and that's one of the reasons we don't probably do as much prescribed burning as we would like to do, because it's difficult to meet all those prescriptions. Now, on this particular day, back in the late 70s, now this is going to be, keep in mind, this is different than a fire department story. We're not at the station. We've gathered people up from around the state, and we've met down by Tucson, and we do a briefing. Okay, here's the plan, here's the maps. It's just like a fire briefing. They got the big maps on a stand, and they're pointing out who's going to do what. And I was assigned to be one of the burners. So as a burner, I'm carrying a drip torch. Actually, I'm carrying two drip torches. And if you have listened to some past stories, specifically last week's story and some others, I've described what a drip torch looks like. And a drip torch is about maybe a, 2-gallon aluminum container, round cylinder, with a spout out the top with a wick at the end. And you light the wick, and then when you tilt the drip torch forward, fuel goes through that spout, hits the wick, ignites, and then lands on the ground. And that fuel is a mixture of gasoline and diesel fuel. And so mostly diesel, you just need a little bit of gas depending on the fuel moisture. And so that's how we light the vegetation on fire when we're doing a controlled burn. So we walk and we slowly drip fuel out of the drip torch and it lights the brush on fire. Well, there are lots of ways to burn out, but in this case, I was assigned with an individual who was senior to me. He was a local division chief for the Forest Service, and they assigned us to walk from like point A to point B and light as we go. Now, this other gentleman, his name was Ralph, he was going to be further away from me, and we were going to kind of split up, but we were going to walk parallel to each other. We had about 4 miles to walk, 3 or 4 miles to walk, to get to the drop point where we finished up our burn, because at that point, that's where the vehicles could drive to, and they were going to pick us up there. So where we were walking, there was no road. There's no road. It was just
was
like
a wash or something.
It was the fuels got kind of spotty, and so we thought, and with the wind blowing the way we thought we had pretty good containment, and in fact, there was no spotting across the lines or anything. It was a big burn. Like I said, it was like 10 or 15,000 acres, which was giant back in those days.
What was the fuel like?
Oh, the fuel. That's a good point. So this was in a kind of a desert scrub vegetation type. So it was above the desert, higher in elevation than the desert where you'd have cactus and that sort of thing, but it was not up into the trees yet. So it's a kind of a scrub, brushy
grass and brush.
Yeah. And the fuel, the brush might have been as high as maybe 6 feet, but mostly more like
so
around.
Not pinyon?
No, below the pinyon.
Okay.
So pinyon trees, for those folks who don't know the trees out west, the pinyon trees kind of grow below the big pine trees, but above the desert. So this was kind of a brushy burn, and it was there were lots of big boulder outcrops, so granite boulder outcrops, which are beautiful, and it's a really pretty country to be in. And so when you're walking, it's on a hillside, so we're kind of side sloping, walking, across this mountain range, the base of this mountain range, and we had a few miles to go, and the burning is going good, everything is going great, and we're getting the, when we burn, we talk about we desired flame length. And we want to burn with a target flame length. So if you, if you get it too hot, maybe you don't want to get it too hot. And you get it too cold, the fire's too cool, then you're not getting consumption of the brush or the fuel that you want. In this case, I don't think we weren't too worried. We wanted to burn the brush pretty good. And we're walking across this mountainside, desert mountain, big boulders, and we're getting good results. Now, I am about probably 50 yards away from Ralph, but I can see where he is based on the fire I see coming up from where he's walking. So I can't necessarily see him, but once in a while I'll see him through the brush. But I can see the fire that's starting from his ignitions, and I'm standing, I'm down below him and behind him, so my fire is not going to burn him up, you know.
Yeah.
Because you got to be very careful when you're burning. You know, if there's multiple burners, you got to be really aware of where the other burner is. So I'm walking along, doing my burning.
Fire etiquette.
Not, fire etiquette.
It's, not burn your other guy.
It's safety. Safety first. So I hear some weird little noise while I'm burning. Like, so that's the sound it was like. Now, this is many, 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 many years ago, but I remember generally it was this really squeaky little, I'm like, what the heck is this? And so now I'm looking for where this noise is coming from. Of course, I've lit the brush on fire. And so I got to be careful where I'm walking because there's flames, you know, 10 feet high or more. And it's smoky. So you, for me, I've all, my eyes have always watered like crazy in the smoke. Now it's bad enough you're breathing the smoke, but I could go half blind because I would start, my eyes would start watering really bad from the smoke.
And that's before the ants attack you?
That's before the, that's between the ants attack. And one time when John and I were on a crew together, he doesn't remember this, but I was following everybody on the Hotshot crew, and my eyes were watering so bad from the smoke, I fell off this rock. I was like, in the, we were in this country, like these big boulders, and I fell about 3 or 4 feet. I mean, you know, you're just walking along, which is not very far, 3 or 4 feet, but when you can't see and you put your foot out, you think you're walking on this ridge top and you really just fell off. You feel like you're going down a 100-foot cliff.
Oh.
It's like, ah! But you hit the ground before you can say too much, you know. Anyway, so I have a history of not being able to see. Ant bites, not being able to see in the smoke. Why the heck was I a firefighter? I don't know. So I hear this noise. I'm looking around in the smoke and the flames amongst these big boulders. Now imagine these granite boulders that I'm walking around in are like 10 or 15 feet in diameter, you know. And
there's a few places like that.
Yeah.
And they're, it's gorgeous.
It's, they're beautiful. When they're not on fire and you're not, and you're trying to, you know, get out of the way, they're, it's great to be there. And anyway, so I'm looking for this noise and I feel like I'm getting closer to it. And I've got both my hands are completely full because I'm carrying these torches, these drip torches, full of a mixture of gas and diesel. And so, and of course, the wicks are burning, you know, which is like you got to be careful when you put the wicks, the torches down, that the wicks aren't dripping fuel out on the ground next to where you're standing, you know. So you got to be aware. I home in on where I think the sound is coming from. And there's this giant granite boulder with a smaller granite boulder in front of it. And there's like this crevice between the two boulders. Now imagine up on top, the crevice is maybe a foot wide. And down as it keeps getting deeper, the crevice gets narrower and narrower. I hear this sound. And I look in this crevice and there is a baby javelina stuck in the crevice. Now its feet aren't touching the ground. It's just stuck there because the crevice narrowed and it's this tiny little pound or 2 pound baby is stuck in there. Now javelina, for those of you who don't know, javelina look like pigs and we call them pigs out west, but they're not pigs. They're not related to the pig family. We used to think that they were in the rodent family, but they're not in the rodent. They're in their own little family, and there's a couple different kinds of species down through Central America and that. But all right, so there's a picture. You see the picture of the baby, and this thing is stuck in this crevice. So I put my torches down, and I've got my gloves on, thankfully, and I reach down and grab the javelina by the scruff of its neck and pull it out of the crevice. Now, I had to get on my stomach.
It's like a V-shaped thing.
It's a V-shaped thing. I'm on my stomach trying to reach down because it was down a couple feet. And so I was able to get it out. So I yell for Ralph, and Ralph comes over. And we get out of the way. We get back away from the flames, and we're standing there, and I give him the javelina, and I said, I don't know, what are we supposed to do? Its mom isn't around. You know, we looked all around for the mother. We figured the mom would be running around, making noise like a deer. Like you think, well, a deer, you know, a doe would be doing the same thing looking for its fawn. There's no sign of the mother javelina. We don't know what caused the baby javelina to fall into that crevice, how long it's been down there, because mom's not around. And if it had just happened from our burning, the javelina would have still been around, but it's not. So I'm kind of standing there, and Ralph is holding the javelina. So I'm like, ugh, I'm picking up my drip torches, and I'm going to say, okay, well, good luck, you know. So I'm holding the drip torches, one in each hand. Now, one of them is full, and one of them is partially full, but maybe, you know, maybe mostly empty. So, you know, that's heavy.
But they're both lit.
Well, just the one is lit. I didn't have both of them lit. So the problem is now, but they're heavy. So I can't carry two drip torches and this baby javelina because I can't, that's too much the weight. And then your hand, I need two hands. And so we're like, what are we going to do? I'm asking Ralph, what do you think we got to do? He's a senior guy. He's older than me. He's higher up in the organization than me. I'm taking my direction from him. Now, let me describe what I'm wearing because this plays into it. You know, we wore Nomex, well, back then, I don't even know if we wore Nomex pants. It might have been just jeans back in those days. But we got a fire shirt on, so a yellow Nomex fire shirt. And under that, I'm wearing a cotton T-shirt kind of a thing because you need that extra layer. And anyway, so I'm standing there, but I didn't really notice it yet, but one of my buttons on my Nomex shirt was undone. It was opened up, and I'm holding those two drip torches, and I was like, "What are we gonna do, Ralph? I don't know. What do you know?" And he says, "Here you go," and he takes the baby javelina and he sticks it in between the buttons. The one button was undone, and he sticks it inside my shirt, between my fire shirt and my T-shirt, and he says, "There you go. That'll work." And he's like, he's done, you know, he's finished, fixed the problem. And I'm like, now these javelinas, you know, they have little baby, they have little tusks, sharp tusks. I can attribute to knowing that because the little thing had sliced my hand already with its little tusk. Cause I had given it some water thinking, well, I don't know. So I had given it put some water in my hand and the thing started to lap it up, but it got really, I don't know. But he sliced my hand with his tusk. Now, this little baby javelina with the sharp tusks is in my shirt between my T-shirt and my fire shirt. And of course, my fire shirt's tucked in, so it just kind of snuggles in and settles right down. And Ralph says, "There you go. We're good. Let's go." So I'm like, I feel like I'm holding onto a tiger by the tail kind of thing. It's like, what do I do? He says, oh, it'll be fine. It'll just settle down. And it's like, yeah, it's because it's not on top of your stomach. And so he calls on the radio and tells dispatch we have an orphaned javelina. We're going to be hiking out to the drop point. Can you say it? Send the Game and Fish Department. Because the Game and Fish will take it and take it to someone who raises them and sets them loose. So we keep working. And I was a little bit uneasy for the rest of the walk to where the drop point was, where the pickup trucks were going to be and where we were going to get picked up. And so continued walking, burning out as I went, and that javelina fell right to sleep, and figured mom was there, I guess. I don't know. So we get to the drop point finally. I take it out of my shirt gingerly, not wanting to get my finger sliced again, and this time making sure I had gloves on. And so anyway, waited around, and Game and Fish Department came and picked up, and we took some more pictures of the little javelina. And so that was...
So you have pictures of the javelina?
Yeah. The picture that's on the website, that is Smokey, that's Smokey Pig. So because, you know, we had Smokey Bear, the history of Smokey Bear in the wildland fire community, that was a little bear cub that was found with its paws burned and its mom gone. And they raised it, and it was became the Forest Service had it in the National Zoo, and it became the symbol of fire prevention, wildfire prevention. So we instantly named this thing Smokey Pig, because this was the same story, but it was a little javelina, and no one seemed interested in making it the mascot for fire prevention.
Javelina fits Arizona better than
it. Javelina would fit Arizona better for sure, and that was that's the story of Smokey Pig. Smokey Pig, the Game and Fish took it. They took it to an area to a person who raises, and they get a band together, and that thing was going to have to be breastfed or bottle fed or bottle whatever, fed. Yeah, because it was too young. And it still had the umbilical cord hanging on.
How much?
Oh, probably 2 inches of the umbilical cord was still on this thing. So it was young. It was a pretty new baby. I don't know how long it takes those things to fall off on a javelina, but I think it was.
That is the cutest story.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And so so here we have all this anxiety going around and all this concern going around. And we don't have to have anxiety. I think it's good just to have a little bit of awareness, follow what the scientists are telling us. But amongst all that, here's a little story. Hopefully it was something to take your minds off the everything that's going on right now. Anything you want to add, John?
Hey, the storm passed last night, and the sky outside is incredibly blue. It is the most gorgeous sky right now.
Well, nothing like the desert skies in winter. Hey, everyone. That'll wrap it up for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. The site continues to get lots and lots of visitors and lots of downloads. I haven't counted up lately, but I know we're over 60,000 story downloads now. So tell your friends. Hope everybody enjoys the stories and gets something from them. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.